mode.
Well, good morning, everyone, here from Phoenix, Arizona, where we are preparing for the upcoming Seven Ray Institute, University of the Seven Rays Conference. And, you know, I guess I'm like a broken record here, but I'm encouraging everybody that possibly can come to this important Second Ray Conference, you know, the Buddha and the Christ, radiant wisdom, all-pervading love, to do your very best to make it, you know. And if you can come to the more academically oriented pre-conference, that's great too. We're going to have, I think, a very in-depth time together. And if it's not possible for you to be there, then I think the live streaming will be very important, and I hope you can join us in that way. I know some of you are in Europe and in other parts of the world, and it's a big trip, and if you haven't planned it up to this point, well, I can well understand that. But anyway, either join the streaming or show up. We'd love to see you and work deeply, because when I look at the world situation, so filled with competition, glamorous, illusory thought, so filled with antagonism, I think the love, wisdom, energy is exactly what has to permeate human consciousness at this time. So please do your best to be with us one way or another, and pretty soon Tuya is going to be sending out the global meditation that we do every conference, and a lot of people support the conference through the meditative process. So if you want to be a part of that and you're not yet a part of it, please write to me, infinitize8@gmail.com, and we'll make sure that you receive the global meditation, which at a certain point, people all over the world will be doing every day in support of the conference. Okay, well, it's good to see all of you here, and let's just have a little alignment, and then we'll get into our academic reading in Glamour, A World Problem. Sorry about last week. There was so much activity around Easter and the Aries full moon that it just was not going to be possible to offer the usual programming. And pretty soon, as a matter of fact, there'll be so much activity around conference that also we'll be having to take a little break, and we'll let you know when that will be. We're kind of broadcasting on the road out of a little sound kit. It may work, it may not. We'll let you know, okay? All right. So here we are, and a group of people in whom the soul is gradually infusing, making its way down into the usual personality consciousness, so that when we look out into the world, we see things far more as the soul would see them. In other words, as our more real identity would see the nature of things. And so we begin to understand from a soul perspective, and not just from a limited, selfish personality perspective. And we feel connected with each other and in unity with each other and with the members of the new group of world servers That's a soul connection, subjective, and of course, somehow related to all men and women of goodwill. Think about what that means, you know, the love in action. They're expressing love in action, men and women of goodwill. And even our relationship extends to all of humanity. Finally, in the body, out of the body, it doesn't make any difference. We're all souls in this one soul. So our job is to be observers of reality. Hard to do these days when there's so much distortion, and you never know whether what you're reading is true or somehow a design for manipulation. We've got to clarify all that, help clarify all that. And we're doing this to help pave the way for the acceptance, recognition of and acceptance of at least part of the divine plan by many, many people who right now don't have a single thought about there being such a plan moving on into the future. A lot of people imagine the end of the world is coming, but very few people see that there is a true divine plan meant to take humanity and the planet forward into much better ways of being and of relating. And so with these thoughts in mind and with the idea of the service that we're offering together as a group, we'll sound a confirming om and then educate ourselves somewhat in this great study and then do some work to help lift the distortions, penetrate and dissipate the distortions which keep so many people from seeing the truth. Okay, well, let's do some work, do some thinking together as we, so we were going to take this up last week if we had had a session, but, you know, the Easter was a pretty intense time. So he went through the whole business of glamour and illusion and I think Maya, and then the summation, the dweller on the threshold, the integration of illusion, glamour, and Maya, and interestingly enough, it can be a very positive integration at a stage of high personality development, but our virtues can conceal our vices, or can become our vices, or can become a factor within our general energy system, which holds us back from further advancement. So even the highly, highly developed personality can get in the way and become the final dweller. You know, you always end up having to give up something good for something that's even better. So people have to lay their well-accomplished personality on the altar for the sake of the soul. And that's not an unfamiliar thought, because at a certain point, we have a causal body that's filled with virtue. And this is the third degree initiate. And how does such an initiate become the fourth degree initiate? The true renunciant, the one who has been crucified, the one who is directly in relation to the monad at last. And the only way to do that is to, as the Christ said in the language of parable, sell all you have, give the money to the poor, and follow me. So we have to count a still higher aspect of ourselves as of greater value than even the vast accumulation of many millions of years of collecting virtue. We're always going to give something up. Every temple must be destroyed. And there will come a time when the temple of Ezekiel, which is the monadic vehicle itself, will have to be relinquished. That's far ahead of us, but we can imagine. We're going to make a journey onto the cosmic astral plane one day, and even later to the cosmic mental plane, and some can go as far on certain paths as the cosmic Buddhic plane. So who's going to make that journey? Well, certainly not the monadic vehicle. It's the essence of the monad which makes that journey, and maybe some other vehicle appropriated on higher planes. But that great vehicle on the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, you know, way up here, this will have to be relinquished so that the essence of the monad can travel still further into the sea of fire and beyond into the higher planes. So we're always going to be sacrificing, not just the bad for the good, because, you know, I think most people can understand why that is necessary. But we're going to have to substitute the good for the better. And that can present quite a quite an internal battle, as it did in the Bible when the rich young man, you know, the third degree initiate, couldn't take the advice of the Christ, and he went sadly away. But of course, you know, later he realized the necessity of doing precisely that, and by now, of course, he's a full member of the hierarchy. So sometimes we fail initially because we don't understand the necessity of sacrificing the good for the better, but we come to it eventually and we realize it must be done. I mean, to the person who is willing to sacrifice, no doors will remain closed. And the old saying is so true, it just has to be lived. To those who give all is given. All right, let's take a look here where we were. We're looking at the human condition and the world condition. And it's not been, well, it's been very progressive, but not very restful for a long time. We have not yet entered that era of peace that is promised, when the spirit of peace will hold sway, and the symbolic Satan, which represents the threefold personality, will be bound for 1,000 years. However, whatever that 1,000 years really means, there will be an era of peace in the Aquarian Age. But right now, we're in the midst of intense struggles to try to bring that about. Now, he says, as to the, as to the causes of this world condition, what can I say, brother of mine, which will convey meaning to your minds? You can see the Tibetan has quite a task here because he realizes things, but he realizes things that we are not yet ready to realize. So he has to find just the right words to meet our limitations. And this goes on, of course. Always the greater is speaking to the lesser, but the greater cannot speak in the terms to which it is accustomed, but must adapt the language to the understanding of the lesser consciousness. So he says, the cause of, you know, the world condition filled with its wars and antagonisms and disease and friction and misunderstanding, you know, glamour, illusion, and Maya, the cause lies far back in the consciousness of the imperfect gods. Now, who are these imperfect gods? We're familiar with the idea that the gods are the planetary logoi, and they're not yet sacred logoi. Our planet is not sacred. Maybe inwardly we are told that it is sacred and approaching sacredness, but outwardly this still has to be worked out. And as far as Mars goes, it's less so, and Pluto, not yet sacred. And there are other non-sacred planets, just the way there are non-sacred human beings who have not yet taken initiation. They are standing outside the temple, as it were. They're outside the fence of the temple. They're profane, you know, before the temple perimeter. So the imperfect gods, okay, does this sentence really mean aught to you? But little, I fear. We must descend into the realm of greater practicality, if we're going to understand anything, and only deal with the matter as far as it concerns humanity. Well, our planet is an initiate of some degree. Cosmically, our planetary logos is an initiate of the first degree. Now, just make an analogy to the average human being who is of the first degree, and you will see how much more perfecting is needed by our particular planetary logos, just the way any one of us who is of the first degree needs a lot of perfecting. Our planetary logos, he tells us, is at one point has suffered from the sense of personality, or maybe we can call it the cosmic glamour of personality, and that's why perhaps things on this planet are so difficult at this time. From another perspective, on our particular planetary chain, there are seven of them, at least seven objective chains, we're going through a kind of fourth initiation. Everybody is, because the planetary logos is. So he's a cosmic initiate of the first degree, heading towards the second degree at some point, maybe towards the judgment day, perhaps, and a kind of intra-scheme initiate of the fourth degree. He's trying to accomplish that in our chain, and hence the difficulty, especially on our globe. Well, those are the big cosmic things, but DK says he better bring it down so it concerns us and our limited scope of understanding, and then maybe we have a little chance of understanding something. So planetary illusion will later be briefly dealt with, and it's not an easy subject, I think, but it will be dealt with. But the immediate problem before man and the significant contribution of the disciple is the dissipation of much of the glamour, not all, in which mankind is immersed and which, during the coming Aquarian age, will largely disappear in connection with the astral life of the race. Well, that's not everything, but it's something. And all you have to do is just try to follow the news, and you'll see this incredible kind of distortion, exaggeration, minimization, you know, misinterpretation in which we live, because people are blinded by their own personality consciousness. So there will be a concerted attack on glamour. I think once Vulcan is discovered, that can happen, but we'll begin it even now and work our way to that possibility. So in the Aquarian age of free-flowing energy and of a truly scientific attitude, much of the glamour will disappear, not necessarily all of the illusion, nor all of the glamour. The point I would make, he says, is to call attention to the fact that it is in meditation and in the technique of mind control that the thinkers of the world will begin to rid the world of illusion. Now, if you try to look at who is mentally focused on our planet, maybe 10 or 15% of the people, and the great majority is astrally focused, and there's still a few at the other end of that bell-shaped curve that are just focused in their senses and in their physical nature. But by and large, we don't yet have a truly thinking humanity. This is one of the things that disciples and world servers have to help bring about within the human energy system, the ability actually to control the mind and to think. Anyway, it's on its way. And so thus he says, hence the increasing interest in meditation, as the weight of the world glamour is increasingly realized. Glamour is so subtle sometimes, you're just in the thick of it all the time, you don't even realize it exists. But increasingly, those people who can think truth and who can observe reality see the distortions in which we live. And you just kind of wonder, will people forever be guided by these distortions? And hence, he says, the vital necessity for right understanding of the way of mind control. So even if we have some success in teaching people occult meditation and progress in it ourselves, we're doing something to bring about, through the power of the fifth ray and the Ajna Center, and the use, the lighted use of the mind, something to bring about the end of this very glamorous situation in which we live. You know, it's called glamour world problem, and for many, it's glamour and unrecognized world problem. Another point which should be noted, says the Tibetan, is that in the crystallization of this material age comes a great opportunity to strike a deadly blow on the planetary dweller on the threshold. Now, you know, crystallization precedes destruction. A supple organism can adapt and go on to live in changing circumstances, but something that is crystallized is ready to shatter. Now, the fact that we have so much increase of the fifth ray to the point where it had to be somewhat held back lest it get so far ahead of everything to seriously imbalance humanity's approach to progress. We have so much of this fifth ray contributes to the crystallization because there is a kind of orientation towards the concrete form with this fifth ray. And look further, the seventh ray is coming in, and one of its problems is also crystallization into form. But it's an opportunity, he says, because it's ready to shatter. Now, what shatters things? It's the hammer. The hammer or some object that you strike, use to strike with great force. That's Vulcan. So you can imagine that when Vulcan is discovered and can be consciously used, the shattering of this great thought form which is holding us down into the material sphere, this great dweller on the threshold, will be greatly facilitated. So let's see when that discovery will take place. the reaction at this time, through the stress of circumstances, is bringing about a more spiritual understanding and a reorganization of human values. You know, we have Venus, we have Taurus, we have Vulcan. It's what it is truly useful to direct one's desires towards. So, you know, the mother of illumination, which is Taurus, Vulcan, which is making Mars radiate. Mars is the personality, and Vulcan makes the light come out. The light is on its way, and we will and are already understanding a higher way of living. Now, people like us, you know, we understand something, but we have to live according to this new sense of values, and that means we're going to be running counter to the clockwise turning of the wheel of consciousness through which most of humanity is passing. In other words, you're swimming upstream, and there are dangers along the way, you know. If I just saw the other day a picture of a great grizzly bear, and I don't know how the person got this picture, but the fish was just virtually leaping into its mouth on the way up the stream, the salmon, you know. Or maybe the bear was very fast, but it was just the moment before the bear's jaws came down on the fish. Well, when you swim upstream, there's a lot of dangers along the way. And maybe not everybody makes it, you know, at least at first. But we have to get used to the idea that we are running counter to the roaring tide of the world's ignorance. That's what how DK frames the idea. So we have to really strengthen our spiritual muscle to keep going. We end up all bruised up, you know, by the end of the journey, but at least we're able to reach home and start the cycle again for those who come after us. So anyway, we have a reorganization of human values. This was written, you know, following the war and during the war, and that was the great principle there. Human values were being terribly compromised. He said, had the Nazis won, they would have produced the most materialistic civilization the world has ever seen. And you know, you can see how their emphasis was on blood and soil and all these things that related to the dense material world. They were not about to bring the spirit into consideration. Okay, and this is part of the process whereby a vital part of the world glamour may be dissipated. Now, when he uses the word vital, it's a Q word. He always means etheric or Maya. So the activated glamour is the Maya and glamour put together, and this can be dissipated, scattered, and rendered no longer effective. If only all men of goodwill within the world aura adhere to their appointed task. So they have to have some inner contact, just as we do. We have to have that because our task in every life is dictated by the soul design, the purpose for which we came into incarnation. We don't want to lose that alignment. So let us hope we can number ourselves, I think we can, among the new group of world servers, or at least among the men and women of goodwill, and at least begin this battle against glamour. Now, when the Buddha was on earth and achieved illumination, and what an illumination it was, he had a cosmic touch. He touched the cosmic mental plane. Now, that's not just Gautama, his disciple. The true Buddha was already, for 2,500 years, the head of the hierarchy. So he used the body of his disciple just the way the Christ used the body of the master or the initiate Jesus. And he achieved an amazing cosmic mental illumination, which he brought down and which suffuses the highest understanding in the Buddhist presentation. So when the Buddha was on earth and achieved illumination, he, quote, let in a flood of light upon the world problem through his enunciation of the four noble truths. Now I've excised these, and you'll find them referenced and scattered throughout the books. But here are the four noble truths, and let's just see, do we really believe these things? Do we live according to these four noble truths? And then, of course, the Noble Eightfold Path, which follows and which is practical. Okay, number one, that existence in the phenomenal universe is inseparable from suffering and from sorrow. What is the phenomenal universe? Well, you know, in one way you could say it's the whole cosmic physical plane, but I don't think that that's what the Buddha means. I think he means the dense physical body of our planetary logos and every planetary logos, the world of condensed form from the cosmic perspective. And if we just want to get practical about it, it's the lower 18 subplanes. This is the phenomenal universe. Everything down from the dotted line here on the mental plane should be considered the phenomenal universe, at least as far as our planet is involved in that universe. Higher than that, we could say cosmically, yes, it's phenomenal, but for people like ourselves, we are just learning spirituality, and those higher reaches of the cosmic physical plane are not really phenomenal for us at all. They are causative. They are noumenal and not phenomenal. See, the noumenon is the archetypal cause behind the phenomenon. So those are two words in philosophy, noumenon and phenomenon, that we want to know something about. Okay, so we can't live down here on the lower 18 subplanes, where we do live, without suffering and sorrow. And, you know, our planet uniquely is a planet of, purifying pain, and there's an adjective before suffering. Something suffering and purifying pain. So we have, you know, to experience this, and our great saviors have been called men of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and this was the Christ. That the cause of suffering is, now this is important, desire for existence in the world of phenomena. So as long as we hold on to whatever is occurring on these lower 18 subplanes as if these occurrences were real and of value, that very desire is going to keep us in the state of suffering. We really have to change our desire nature. This is what the Buddha's very rare sixth ray mind was all about. You know, there's a high form of the sixth ray mind, very rare phenomenon, and the Buddha had it, and he also says the Catholic Church, in the two examples he gave, the Catholic Church has the sixth ray mind. Obviously, it's not the kind of penetrating mind that the Buddha had. It tends to be dogmatic, you know. Okay, number three. Now, how do we, you know, he's so practical, you can't escape it. Here's the reason it exists, because you desire it. Now, how are you going to end it? The cessation of suffering is brought about by eradicating all desire for existence in the universe of phenomena. But how are you going to know what's going on in the other worlds unless you meditate and penetrate into those higher worlds? So the whole meditative life reveals to you possibilities of livingness that were not conceived when your consciousness is benighted down here in the lower 18 subplanes. And that's the way we get rid of the desire. Oh yes, we suffer, we get sick of it, we say there must be something better than this, and we go for it according to the ancient methods of meditation. And that's how desire is eradicated by surfeit, we might say. We just get so tired of the same old thing without the possibility of expansion and a more living experience. And meditation will give that to us. And just living under these heavy circumstances will also give that to us. Okay, now, how shall we make suffering cease? Well, the way to the cessation of suffering is by treading the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, the number eight is so connected with Mercury, so connected with the Buddha. It is his number. It's so connected with the Antikarana. When I was a friend of mine and I had met the living disciple in the Tibetans group. She was the youngest one, and she lived longer than everybody, and they sent her their things when they were on the point of death and so forth. And she had some kind of a map, somewhere I have it, I think it was drawn up by the students themselves, where, or under the suggestion of the Tibetan, where the whole Antikaronic process is represented by superimposed figure eights, you know, like, you know, here's an eight, and now you go further, here's another eight, now you go further. You can understand how you can keep on expanding the figure eight. Now, the Buddha is the Antikarana. He is, in a way, the Antikarana between Shambhala and hierarchy. He comes, we are told, to the earth during Vaisak for 8 minutes every year. And that number is particularly his number. It is the number of Mercury, and he is Mercury. The word Bud does mean wisdom, and he is the Lord of Wisdom. There are so many things that relate the Buddha to the number eight. Every great teacher has certain numbers which are important. I was just thinking the other day, you know how sometimes license plates give you a little hint, and I saw a license plate with 555 on it. Well, I didn't think of the concrete mind at all. I said, aha, there's the number of Venus, just the way 777 is the number of Earth, and 666 of ill repute is the number of Mars, and I think 888 of Mercury and so forth. So there's a lot in esoteric numerology to reveal the main functions of the planetary logo. Anyway, this is the Noble Eightfold Path, and about this path, so much has been written, so much has been spoken. It's just a question, you know, like the 12-step program in Alcoholics Anonymous or any one of those 12-step programs. You can see the steps, but do you follow them? And it's the same here with the Noble Eightfold Path. We can understand, but do we follow those steps? So anyway, right belief, right intentions, right speech, right actions, right living, right endeavor, right mindedness, and right concentration. Now, they are differently translated in different listings, and all of this is from Alice Bailey's From Bethlehem to Calvary, page 14 and 15. Okay, so the Buddha let in from the cosmic mental plane a huge flood of light. And those of us who are theosophically inclined, you know, and have been studying in this field for a long time, we are the beneficiaries of this huge light released by the Buddha some 2,500 years ago when he was taking his sixth initiation and became a great Chohan, and onward he moved, just as the Christ did, into the beginning of the seventh initiation. So, you know, though you think about those people. I mean, they are so much in advance of us, thousands and thousands of years in advance of us. They took together the third initiation millions of years ago. Now, everything has sped up since then, and it's now possible to take the initiations more rapidly. But their third initiation was millions of years ago, probably in the fourth subrace or maybe the fifth subrace of the Atlantean root race. Anyway, about the Buddha, he had disciples, and they were very advanced. They were more advanced than the Christ disciples. His body of disciples and his 900 arhats, now that may be a symbolic number, of course, has a lot to do with conclusion and with the third ray, which is his monadic ray. His body of disciples and his 900 arhats formulated those four great truths into a structure of dogma and doctrine that, by the power of collective thought, has greatly helped in the attack upon world illusion. Now, it makes sense because the Buddha is a third ray monad, and Buddhism has a profound thinking, philosophical third ray under it, and so it makes sense that the attack would be particularly upon illusion, not leaving necessarily glamour untouched. Today, the Christ is emerging. The Maitreya Buddha, a teacher for our time with Gautama Buddha behind him, as it were, upholding a third ray position in a triangle surrounding the Christ. Today, the Christ is carrying forward the same great task. And in the spiritual significance of his imminent coming, you know, how long? A century or two. I mean, it's not long. And in the language of symbolism, he warns us here, he and his 9,000 arhats, will they be, in fact, fourth degree initiates now? Because he was not surrounded by high initiates at first. The Christ was surrounded by initiates of the first, maybe the second degree. John the Baptist, who was relatively high in that assembly, was taking the second degree. And then maybe there were others who were taking the third, but the majority of them first and second degree. The Buddha's arhats were of higher accomplishment. But anyway, maybe those who will surround the Christ will be his hierarchy. They are called noble souls, arhats, and they will be of high degree. So he and his 9,000 arhats will strike a second blow at the world glamour. So already illusion has been worked upon by the followers of the Buddha, and when the Christ is appearing and in full force and supported by those who are meant to assist him in a powerful way, the real blow against world glamour will be struck. And it is for this that we prepare. Now, DK is saying, okay, it's a preparation. We're not yet there, and the Christ has not yet appeared, and so many things have to happen in the five planetary centers before the Christ can appear. The disciples of the masters have to gather in those centers. The master himself has to appear in those centers. And when the master and his disciples are in the five planetary centers, then I think it will be so that the Christ can actually appear. So hence, what does it say here? Okay. So we're preparing for this. Only the intuition can dispel illusion, because the intuition is a whole-making, unitive faculty, and illusion is based on fragmentation. I've got this somehow in my head. There are many ways to describe illusion, but when we overcome fragmentation of perception and are able to see all things as one, which we do through the intuition, then the dispelling of illusion is possible. And hence is coming the need of training intuitives, which is going to happen somewhat in the sixth subrace of the fifth root race, now imminent, and will happen even more in the true sixth root race. Hence, practical here, the service you can render to this general cause by offering yourself for this training, offering yourselves for this training. If you can overcome glamour in your own lives, you know, just turn to page 120 and 121, 122, 123, right in there. You'll see all the glamours of the rays. You'll recognize some of your glamours, right? If you can overcome glamour in your own lives, and if you can, therefore, comprehend the nature of illusion, you will help in the following way. Now, he's already described these opposing factors. And this is the way we have to think of it. These D's are sometimes so mnemonic, you know. The destruction of the dweller on the threshold, that's like the great negative personality factor, which prevents us from realizing the soul. The devitalizing of the general Maya, so it doesn't drive us up and down the land. The dissipation or scattering of glamour, and suddenly, through intuition, the dispelling of illusion. So remember those words: destruction, dispelling, dissipation, devitalization. And of course, sometimes there's different ways of looking at this. Another set of D's you're familiar with: discipline, dispassion, discrimination, decentralization, detachment. These are mnemonic devices, and they help us hold in mind necessary lists and configurations. We don't want to always have to be running to the books to find out what is there. You have to hold some things in your mind through memory, and that's where the third ray, the Lord of Memory, comes in. Now, this you have to do in your own lives and in group relation. If any of us thinks that we're completely done with illusion, with glamour, and even with Maya, and that we have destroyed our dweller on the threshold, which probably doesn't really come until the fourth degree, I think we're wrong. We're not correct. There's still a lot of things that need to be done. Then your more general contribution will help in the wider human issues. The acuteness of the intellect, the acute ray of divine mental perception, the acute energy of divine mental perception. This is what the third ray is called by the Tibetan. The acuteness of the intellect and the illumination of the mind, plus the love and intention, love and will accomplish much. And to this service, I reiterate my call. He's always invoking us. He's always seeking to galvanize us. He's always moving us towards greater and more effective action on behalf of the divine plan. We have such a great teacher. We have a great teacher. And we have to take advantage of this wealth that has been offered. We have 7 years in which to do so very much before all the new implications of the conclave begin to be released upon humanity. So I'll tell you what, I'm not going to read any more right now. We'll next time we get together, and I'm going to think about that, whether we can meet again next week. You know, Tuya and I are going now to the hotel for, you know, intensive preparation for the conference. And there's just so many things to do on the practical physical plane that it's not always possible to continue the usual kind of activity. So I'll let you know whether we can continue next week. But anyway, this is the end of Dissipation of Glamour Initiative number 72. And the day today is the 6th of April. And we're on page something. I never know the page. I never remember the page.
It's page 24.
Thank you. The number of Shambhala. Perfect. Okay. Page 24. Thank you, Joe. See how God intervenes to help us in our hour of need? Okay. All right. And so, beginning of Dissipation of Glamour. Oh, Gaudi, that won't work. Number 73. And that would be on the 13th, I guess. Is that Friday the 13th? Oh, all right. We should probably have it just to have it. and K. And it's page 24 onward, whatever it is. And where do we start today? I'm not sure. You see it, Joe?
Page 22.
Very good.
Page 22.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Great. Now, that's as far as I want to go right now. Of course, I want to go further, but time and, it's a question of time, that great illusion, time. He says the we all get better at the management of time, and that the true initiate can truly manage time, and the time and space become the playthings of the of the members of the hierarchy. Well, we're not there yet, but we're on our way. Okay, so friends, your thoughts now, your questions, your statements, whatever, in relation to what we have just gone over, or in occultism in general. So here's Anne. Oops, and we have more, too, don't we? All right, we got quite a bit here. So we have Anne and Jan. So question one, can one avoid crystallization? The answer, you know, it depends on what level. We, in terms of the body, which is expendable, we probably cannot yet do that unless we're like the Master R, who knows exactly what to eat, exactly how to make the body immortal. A number of the masters know these secrets and can perpetuate the physical form by following certain rules which are not at our disposal. But generally, the Tibetan is a little humorous. He says, as we get older, the body begins to creak, he says, you know, and we all notice that. So we're not going to, you know, we have to get rid of inadequate forms. And no matter how good you think your body has served you and your brain and your different externalizations of the energy system, something better is waiting that will be built by the stage of consciousness you have attained. So in one way, unless you already are a master and have a very long assignment, then let's just say that the crystallization serves a useful destructive function so that you can be equipped with something better and more responsive soon. Can the path of least resistance help, and what is the path of, well, you know, he's always warning us not to follow the path of least resistance. He calls this expediency. He relates it to the third ray, and he tells us that so often spiritual values may be sacrificed if we just follow the path of least resistance. Now, I don't mean by that that we should not follow the purpose for which we are came into incarnation. But if we do follow that purpose, we will find a lot of resistance, because the resistance is tied up with the roaring tide of the world's ignorance. And we are definitely swimming against the stream. All real disciples and masters of the wisdom have perpetually to swim against the natural stream, as it were, in order to find themselves once again within the spirit. And as they emerge from denser and denser manifestations, they must always meet resistance. Now, I think in Agni Yoga, one of my favorite quotes, this pressure is the law of existence. Pressure is the law of existence. So we don't want to just give in to something because it's easy and cut the corners and all that, you know. We have to face the opposition. So I would recommend knowing what your purpose is, of course. But if you know what the purpose is and you follow it, there will be resistance. I mean, take a look at a fourth degree initiate. This initiate gets ejected, that's the word, ejected by humanity because he's no longer following the strictly human way, and humanity throws him out, you know, and that's what we, but throws him out what? Into the hierarchy, really. So that kind of ejection has to do with the resistance that the initiate must work against. Christ did not say a whole lot of pleasant things in the red letter version of the Bible, you know, that first ray mind of his, you know, he just said it. And so many people, they were angry and shocked because he was going against the stream. So, that's one thing. And please ask the question. The question begins, there are reports currently on the energy we are now receiving from the Galactic Center, as well as gamma bursts, okay, from other directions, that's possible. They are occurring daily, so I wonder how this interaction works towards our intent. Maybe we aren't swimming upstream as these energies join. Well, look, you know, when you enter the stream at the second initiation, and it's a high initiation and one for which we have to work a long time, there is a current which is carrying us towards the ashram. We have the benefit of this current, but life doesn't get any easier, and we are, in my view, all I can do is share my view, we are swimming upstream. The old saying in the poem, and is it by Rossetti or one of those Elizabethan poets, not Elizabethan, but Victorian poets, the path winds uphill all the way. Probably, you know, that quote can be found and we can see who is the author. I'm a little conservative in these matters. We know hardly anything about the hierarchy, our own planetary hierarchy. We know practically nothing about the solar hierarchies that have to do with our solar system and the sacred and synthesizing planets. Practically nothing. He gives us a little hint about the schools that are found here. And I know there are some teachers that like to take you way out in the galaxy right away. I think it's an inflation. And while it is true that there are great events in our cosmos, we have so many things that have to affect us within our own context, planetarily, solar systemically, in terms of our next cosmic logos, within the one about whom naught may be said, which, vast as that being is just a mite compared to the galactic scope. So, you know, I don't know so much about it, but I'm just saying it's speculative, it's interesting, and there are so many things to solve first, even the control of our own astral body. So sometimes I get very practical and say, look, right here at home, we have issues. Let's address them. So anyway, yes, the light is millions of years old. And could you please send the written question, read the written question aloud before comments or response? Thank you. Sometimes I lose the question. Okay, all right. Well, I don't know if I've done that or not done that, but I'll try to do that. Okay, so that's from Jan. And, of course, if you're kind of a cosmologist, you know, you're really interested in the cosmic events, they all have their effect. But they have their effect on solar systems. They have their effect on great planetary logoi. And for us, it's the trickle down, as we say. It's hard to relate these great events in our cosmic system to immediate human development. They have a lot more to do with the development of our planetary logos or of our solar logos, who are just tiny little beings compared to a galaxy. I think they've got some speculations now that there are galaxies, and I'm probably off here minimizing this, but galaxies with 6 trillion stars in them. I mean, they may be very old because they're part of the earlier light that's reaching us, and maybe there's been a kind of a division of these great beings, and then a reamalgamation, but huge numbers of Soto Logoi. So look, it's a sense of proportion that we have to preserve. The big thing for each one of us, and it's a very humble thing, yeah, but look, I like to go way out there too, you know, and I'm always interested in pure being and the absolute and absolute infinity and all those kinds of things. But the real thing for each one of us, and something that the Buddha knew, because he was so immensely practical, what is your next step? Really, really, all of us, what is your next step? The next one, not just, there's things I love to fantasize about and maybe even learn about, and I do, but when push comes to shove and the rubber hits the road, what do I have to do next to make this little embodiment truly worthy of the hierarchy so that it can truly cooperate with the elder brothers and sisters? How can it do that? How can it do that? And it's a very humble thing, but that's where the progress is really made. Okay, now, does the road wind uphill? Oh, good, 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 good. I knew it was a Rossetti in there somewhere. Thanks, Alex. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end. Will the day's journey take the whole long day? From morn till night, tonight, my friend. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And the road winds uphill all the way. And I don't think it was easy coming forth as a projected monad into density. And it's not easy to return. There's nothing about this monadic pilgrimage we're on, and it's just the beginning, which is easy. Nothing at all. Thanks for that. And by the way, I think we want to announce here, maybe Joe, just say something about Alex's yes. work there.
Alex, at the time of the Aries full moon, Alex did a presentation for the 2025 initiative. The bibliography is in the handouts, and the link to her talk is in the chat box if you're interested, folks. And thank you, Alex, for letting us know.
Okay, excellent. And thank you for that good work, Alex. We all make our contribution along the lines that our history has inclined us, and our history has inclined us according to the rays of our soul, the more permanent ray of the soul, and the astrological sign, which is more permanently associated with our causal body and from the time that body was created. And, you know, how to find that, it's difficult, but maybe the advancement in astrology can help us, okay? So, okay, good. Thank you for these questions. Is there anything else? And also for your statements, thank you. We have from Anne, Alexandra so far, and Jan. Okay. I mean, look, you know, just follow your bliss, as Joseph Campbell says, and learn about wonderful, far-out things. I mean, you know, the masters know a little bit, and just a little bit, about the quality of local galaxies. I got that impression when I was reading around page 1084 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. DK, for some reason, goes very, very cosmic right in those pages. And he says, look, every one of these galaxies, he doesn't use the word galaxy, but you know that's what he's talking about. They have their own quality. They have their own symbol. And the masters know about these. But, you know, to keep a sense of proportion is one of the hardest things for us as students of esotericism to maintain. An adjusted sense of right proportion is humility. That's the DK's definition. And I love to expand. I love to expand. And then I know if I'm going to take my next step forward, I better come right back to a very humble position. What is that next step, and how practically do I do it? Otherwise, I might be escaping, you know? I might escape into stuff that I'd just love to consider. The whole Vedanta presentation, I just love it. And I could hang out there. But I also know that I've got to make progress in the world of illusion. And that's by doing very humble things and just taking the step that begins as a single step and goes on for 10,000 miles, as the old Taoists used to say. Okay, is there anything else, folks, that you would like to discuss or anything else before we do our little meditation? I'd love to see you at conference, you know. I keep on plugging the conference. It's a wonderful place. It's a new venue now. It's located, you know, so you can walk out the hotel door and be in Old Town Chandler. It's like not exactly 100 years ago, but it's kind of fun, and there's all kinds of places to visit. And so it's a more integrated experience in some way than our old venue, which didn't have that kind of old town so proximate to it. So I think people really enjoyed themselves. Last year was our first year in the new venue, and I think, you know, we'll probably continue there for a while, hopefully up to the year 2025, and then we'll just see what we do. Okay, anything else? Okay, well, then why don't we, if there's not, why don't we, it's so nice to see you all here, you know, and I appreciate, too, you know, when you take the step of, you know, saying something, asking something. Look, we're beginners. Let's face it. We're beginners. Look at a consciousness like Master DK's. Look at the knowledge that's there. I mean, every master has their own accumulation and their own great field of expertise, their own interests. And we're given a great feast of knowledge and insight through the writings of the Blue Books, and it's not over yet. Another 7 years, new works on astrology will appear, he tells us, and the third installment. So it's a feast, you know, a feast of knowledge and understanding, leading hopefully to wisdom, and we keep proportion. We are beginners, you know. There's no use in pretending to be what one is not, you know, no use at all. Let's just recognize we have a long way to go, and we're being given very, very good material to help us on our journey. Okay, so let us then work with the practical issues that we have. So much distortion in the world at the moment. So much, and so much lying. So much. Okay. So much competition and friction and difficulty. We have to help correct that somehow. And we've been given a method, so we'll use it. Okay. So, there are quite a few of us here, but we'll adapt the beginning of this formula for the dissipation of glamour, and we'll enter an energy-generating silence together. And we feel the growing cohesion that silence can bring. Now, I remind us and I remind myself that this is not easy work and it has its dangers. So we use the protective formula with the cross of divinity, the lighted cross of divinity, which DK recommends, forehead, chest, left eye, right eye. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And see the lighted cross of protection for ourselves individually and as a group. Now we blend the lights. We bring up the light of matter to the plane of mind and blend it with the light of the reasoning mind. We imagine this, the vitality of matter, the light of matter, blending with the light of our mind, our usual clarifying, reasoning mind. And we also reach towards the soul and try to recognize the presence of soul light. And we bring down from the higher mental plane the light of the soul and fuse this third type of light imaginatively with the light of matter and of reasoning mind. So three lights. Matter, mind, and soul come together. The three are one. Upon the plane of mind that we ordinarily control. Soul light, the light of mind, the light of matter, three are one. The basis of our searchlight, a revelatory weapon. And we say then about this fused light the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. So we are in a state of preparedness now, and we have submitted to the protective formula, and we have our instrument prepared. And we're going to then say together the following, and as we do so, we'll visualize a great searchlight arising from the light we have created, and that searchlight will pour forth onto the astral plane. Each one of us has a small part of this greater searchlight. It's coming from the brow, from the forehead, and these are the words we use as we visualize this searchlight turning on and being directed towards the astral plane and its glamours. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. And we remember that the world of meaning is the world of the soul, linking the world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And so our beam is clearly seen, and we strengthen it with these words about the spiritual will. With power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And our goal, you know, to destroy these glamours and distortions, these lies, these misrepresentations, these fabrications, which have nothing to do with truth. I wonder if we've ever seen a time when so much lying is going on from public office. Now, the glamour that we continue to focus on and which is misleading the thinking of so many people who are not discriminating and who are quite emotionally focused and are still subject to demagoguery, is the glamour of lying, of misrepresentation, of fabrication. It's just false information. Serving the personality rather than the soul. So using our beam, our group beam, let us see what we can do to penetrate this glamour of untruthfulness, denial, misrepresentation, fabrication, lying. Let's see what we can do to weaken and dissipate this glamour. So these words of power, we first sound the word of power, accompanied by our visualization, and then we work in the silence for 5 minutes. With intensity of purpose, so the words of power. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of lying. The power of our united light negates the quality of this glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of lying, of misrepresenting, of distorting, of fabricating, destroys the life. Behind this glamour. And so in the silence, and wielding the group instrument which at once reveals the glamour and dissipates and destroys, we work in the silence. 5 minutes. And so our task is to help reveal the truth in all circumstances. It's very difficult, but the power of Pluto, the power of Vulcan, before the first initiation of humanity will help us do that. There will be some hurt to the personality which seeks to sustain its own comfort, but the general situation will clear and the tendency to lie will not appear on the astral plane or mental, and people will not be affected by that tendency, and there will be no vitality or life to support that tendency. We will see, we will know, and we will base our judgment and our actions upon our perception of truth. So then we withdraw our beam from the astral plane. We shut down that beam, that triple light, which is the source of the beam. And we continue to work on our own difficulties with glamour and on the larger situation as much as we can detect it. More and more people are knowing, despite the various protestations that occur from the leaders and subordinates in various countries, we begin to see what is true and what is not. Let us sound the Om then three times, affirming that together we have done some work to help clarify this problem and to rid humanity of this problem. This is ongoing work, my friends, and as we have seen, it will be the Christ and his symbolically 9,000 arhats that will strike the decisive blow against world glamour, and everything we do now is preparation for that time. Now, tomorrow, if we can manage it, we will continue. I think it's on the morning schedule. We will continue our work with the soul of nations, and if for some reason we cannot do it, we will let you know. And Sunday, the work of attracting money for hierarchical purposes. I want to thank you, Olivia, Tuya, and myself, who together originated this particular initiative. I want to thank you for attending and for participating. And let's keep our work going in subjective manner, because subjectively we can be powerful, and we've been given the tools with which to work. So this will be up shortly, and tell your friends about our work. if they are interested in helping to rid their individual life from glamour and also help with the general glamorous situation of human consciousness. And, you know, it wouldn't be right if I didn't say, and do come to the conference, or at least participate in our live streaming. So for now, thank you, Joe and BL, for backing us up here. And thank you, everyone, for your presence. We'll see you soon. And hopefully before long, and if that's not possible, you'll hear from us, because indeed preparations for the conference are now quite intensive, and we do have to concentrate on those things. All the best, lots of love to everybody, and we'll see you before long. Take care.